So a few years back, there was this whole thing of the, on the then relatively new internet thingy, of lawyer jokes. I am not going to repeat any of them. As it was just the ongoing phenomenon of finding a group to demonize and then putting them down with a certain cruel humor. Sometimes that's a reflection of frustration at the group of individuals concerned, and they, particularly when they seem untouchable, and sometimes that's just cruelty. Lawyers have had a bad rap, particularly in North America, or Turtle Island, as some indigenous communities call these lands. And especially in the USA, where there was a reputation for lawyers to be fast-talking, manipulative, and often filthy rich. Though in many ways, it is lawyers and late-night comedians that seem to be the ones holding the line in these complicated and dangerous days in the US, when judges and politicians in high office have abdicated their responsibility for the well-being of the nation and even the well-being of democracy and justice. It has been lawyers that have sought to keep alive some form of the rule of law. So shout out to those truth seekers and advocates for justice. But I digress. Those thoughts spring out of the very beginning of the second reading for this afternoon, a snippet from the Gospel of St. Matthew, where a lawyer, we're told, asks the question, which commandment in the law is the greatest? I've been told at various times in my own Christian journey that this kind of encounter was part of Jesus repeatedly butting heads with the religious authorities of his day. Well, the lawyer in our story today isn't the kind of lawyer that we would think of. Today's lawyer is also described as a scribe or a teacher of the law. In broadest terms, they were wrestling with the meaning within the Hebrew law and the way in which faithful Jews might interpret the law in order that they might live it out fully and with integrity. These scribes or lawyers existed alongside groups such as the Sadducees, the Pharisees, the Essenes, and others who were essentially lay orders dedicated to exploring and living out their lives as faithful followers of the laws of Moses. And the idea of testing Jesus was not necessarily conflictual. The process of engaging with the law was a robust and healthy interrogation of the text and of previous interpretations of it. To those of us on the outside, it might seem as though that passage from Matthew is a kind of odd wordplay which we don't really have the key to, about whose son is the Messiah and the son of David, and how can my Lord be his Lord and that Lord be that Lord if that person's at that time and that one is at another time. We don't really have the key to that. There's the naming of the heart of the law, which we do understand, loving God with all we are and loving our neighbor and loving ourselves. But the stuff about Messiah and whose son the Messiah is feels like looking in on a conversation which we only have half an idea of. But to assume that Jesus was, in encounters such as this, always fighting with the Jewish religious leaders, is to buy into a subtle version of that heresy which says that Christianity is always butting heads with our siblings in the Jewish tradition. That Christianity is superior to the faith of our Hebrew forebears to such an extent that it supplants Judaism, a heresy which we call supersessionism, which leads to anti-Semitism, persecution, pogroms, and even Holocaust. It also leads many Christians into this equally false idea that somehow the only purpose of our faith is to batter others into a kind of intellectual submission, so that they have no choice but to convert to our way of seeing things, our way of seeing and being. Some call it apologetics, but more often than not, I've seen it be bullying and relating to an insecurity which cannot allow others to be themselves, to be different. Instead, they must be subject to our way of doing things, our values, our church, our version of Christianity. It's this mindset that leads to the evils of culture wars, of imposing a certain set of values upon others who do not subscribe to our faith, of the oppressions of colonialism, though there's a lot to unpick about the evils of the colonial church, which we don't have time to do. It's this which leads to the national, to Christian nationalism, and to those who wrap their religion in a flag and forget the values of Jesus. It's what causes those of us who are preachers to fall into the trap of expounding doctrine and dogma, telling people what they should or must believe, rather than drawing hearers into a conversation with the text, the Spirit, and with one another, as Jesus did. Jesus told stories and invited open-ended reflection rather than closed systems. And yet so many Christians prefer the opposite of the example that he set. The chances are that many of those who encountered Jesus, who were lawyers, Pharisees, or members of other sects within first century Judaism, were inviting him into conversation. We're using the method we call, or our Hebrew brothers and sisters and siblings call, midrash, deep engagement with the text, to get from Jesus what he actually meant and how he was encouraging his followers to live out the values of the law, values of justice and equity and peace. How different our history would be if we took the example of our Hebrew forebears in faith and our current Jewish siblings in inviting one another to engagement with sacred text, in acknowledging that every time we open our scriptures, we are engaged in interpretation, and that rather than claiming there is only one way to see these texts, we recognize that our Bibles do not need protection from investigation, that our doctrines and dogma are subject to the community of faith and not the other way around. May our hearts and minds be opened to the joy of engaging with our sacred text and inviting others to that conversation. Amen.